Can everybody hear me okay? Okay, I move a lot when I talk. I hope my phone will continue to talk to Keynote from way over here. Yeah. Oh, do I have to stay up? Oh, come on. I'm going to pace like a little animal in a cage. All right, I'll try. Okay. So I'm Jessica Hilt. I'm from the University of California, San Diego. I also worked for CompleteCampaigns.com, which was eventually bought by Aristotle International. So I'm very familiar with DC, as it was in politics. I work for UCSD as something called a technical outreach and program analyst. I like to say that I'm either a geek socialite or I'm a nerd herder. So one of those is a better job description than that one. So that's what I do. And if you may be in the wrong room, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to talk about. I'm talking today about feeding and care of community. And that doesn't mean I'm talking about the feeding and care of only technical communities. I do a lot of community work. I do a community work within UCSD, but I also do community work with women and minorities in technology outside of my job. And I'm a fiction writer, so I do a lot of community building with fiction writing and actually nonfiction writing as well. But what I mean to say is that this talk is going to be about how to build communities or revive stagnant communities, but it doesn't have to be limited to the communities of tech. These principles can be applied to almost any community. All right, so I think a good place to start is, what do I mean by community? So as you can see, I am an amazing artist, since I do my own graphics. These are types of communities, and they're very simple types of communities. Your first kind of community is a peer community, and those are people who are interested in the same level of things you're interested in, probably have the same job title as you. Those are your peer, that's your family community. There's also interrelated peer community, and that's like people that are of varying levels who might be within different departments and the way that they interact together. And then our last community, which I like to call City on Fire, because for whatever reason, those arrows make look like my city is on fire, is my large community. And these are people of very different degrees of commitment, very varying different degrees of interest, but they all are working together for a service or for a company or for a product. These tend to be users groups or, for instance, community action groups within a large city. All of these are different types of community that these tools can be applied with. So just to give some examples of the communities that I'm involved in. So obviously, my peer community is going to be at least 15 people, right? They're all basically interested in the same things I'm interested in. They're basically on the same level as me, although a lot of you are a lot smarter than me. But, you know, that happens. Larger communities, interrelated communities, are going to be things like the department that I work for, or that they are on all different levels. I'm working with different departments on campus. For you, it might be different departments within a company. And then finally, a larger community would be like either UCSD as a whole, right? Students, faculty, and staff. Or it might be like I live in the beautiful neighborhood of South Park, which is like a hipster community in San Diego. That's a larger community for me. Okay, what is it not? Whenever I talk about community, the first thing somebody says is like, oh, we're going to build a community. We're going to get on Slack. Slack is not a community. Facebook is not a community. If you took the people out of Facebook, it'd be super boring. So therefore, it's not a community. If you're looking at community building, you can't start with a tool. A tool is just something to help. You have to start with the community itself. Thanks. All right. So why do we need community? If you're in this room, I am preaching to the choir, okay? You all are here. You didn't come in like, I don't think I need community. I'm gonna see if she can change my mind. Like, nobody came to this talk like that. You came in here because you think community is important. So why are you at my talk, right? What I hope to help you do is articulate why community is important so that you can do one of two things. Well, hopefully both of two things. One, you're gonna need money. Even if you're a grassroots community that's interested in music, even if you're a writing community that's interested in just doing a small group, eventually something's going to grow, you're going to come down the line, and you're going to want to do something with that. to be able to articulate why your community is important and what it does for other people is going to be a huge part into gathering that money. And the other thing is you're going to need other people in your community. You can't just be like, join my community. Why? Because it's cool, right? It's not going to work. So my hope is that I can give you the tools on how to articulate community well to other people so that they'll want to be part of your community. Okay, so there is a mystery writer. His name is Harlan Coben, and he said this very long thing, but the thing at the bottom is the most important. The boat rises and sinks together. One of the things that I come across when I'm talking about community is there is a resistance of why should I train up other people? Why should I help other people get jobs in tech? There aren't enough jobs. I'm worried about my job being taken away. Why would I want to build community? Well, one of the reasons that Harlan Coben talks about this, and he talked about this because a journalist asked him, what do you think about the competitive nature of writers? Like, don't you just love competing? And he was like, no, that's not what it's about. There's a friendly rivalry. But if we work together as a community and we write amazing mystery novels, we get more readers. And more readers will buy more books, and then there'll be more jobs for those writers. The same thing happens in technology. The better we make technology, the better we make people who work in technology, then you have a user who says, oh my gosh, you know what was super awesome? This technology. You know what we should get more of? Technology. And then we have more people who are employed in technology. So that is one of the resistance that I want to discourage. It is about making us all better, and we all rise together when we do this. So how do we rise together? There are three ways that I think we rise together. One is education and evaluation, socialization and promotion, and then something that I'm going to call inspiration. All right, so evaluation and education. The first idea of evaluation is education is this right? When you are working by yourself in a silo, you have something that you've written or you're doing something, you're pushing something live, you have an idea for a product, you have an idea for a story, right? Is this right as a way to go out into the community and say, you know, this is what I'm thinking of. Does this seem right to other people? And by getting a diversity of views, you're going to not only find out if it's right or if you could be making it better. And that's one of the benefits of having a community is being able to evaluate and educate either a product or code. The second one is I'm about to scream. And this is everybody's experienced it. You're doing something. It doesn't work. It doesn't matter how many times you do it. It's not working for you. This is a piece of crap software. I hate everything. I hate my job. Life is horrible. Right? That happens. But when you can go out to your community and be like, did anybody else run into this problem? And you get somebody who says, oh my gosh, isn't that the worst? It's terrible. I worked on it for like 6 months, but then I had this breakthrough. And so you have other people that you can run across that can help bring you up to speed on a product or let you know of problems that you're going to run into when you use that product. And then the last thing is more of a joke. Not really. I mean, anybody who's worked in decentralized IT, oh, universities, you guys are the best. Is anybody using these round things to make their cart go faster? Reinventing the wheel is such a waste of time. By developing a community and having education and evaluation around that community, you get to find things that you could have done all by yourself for 6 months, or somebody has already done it for you. And that's one of the most brilliant things about community is you can go in and somebody can hand over what they've been doing and you can start from a much farther point and not waste. It's about efficiency, but I hate the word efficiency because it sounds boring. Okay, so this is an example of evaluation and education. This is, I run a Campus Lisa at UCSD, which is like Real Lisa. We do call it Real Lisa at UCSD when we're talking about Usenix. because you guys are real Lisa, we're fake Lisa. We have a committee of about 15 people that work, and we have a Slack channel, and they're great, amazing, smart people that work in a diverse area in campus. They're all from different areas. We're not even near the same buildings, but we chat almost every day on Slack. We're only supposed to be talking about Lisa, because that's what our Slack is for. But when Lisa is over, we usually talk about things like the Great British Bake Off or The Martian. or anything else that comes to mind. Manisha, one of the women in my committee, came online and said, I'm having this problem. Does anybody know how to do this? And she directed the question to Eric, who is another person. And Robin came back with, boom, and within moments, a huge chunk that would that saved her many, many hours of frustration. She was obviously very frustrated in trying to do this. So that's just a, you know, a quick example. Now, because I work in academia, right, I'm at a university, I love to pull case studies, right? Because case studies is what, like, make academic people think that what we're doing is super cool. So here's a great case study. This is from Using Small Groups to Promote Active Learning in the Introductory Statistics Course, a report from the field, from the University of Idaho. And so there were people in this Intro to Statistics class. I probably failed this class, right? The historical pass rate was 64%, and then when they brought in cooperative learning, which is a fancy pants term of little tiny communities that were helping each other out to get through this course, the pass rate went up to 86%. That's huge. That's a huge increase in a with a very minute change. But wait, there's more. Cooperative learning also does a lot of other things that you wouldn't expect. Not only do people pass the class, but they like what they're doing more. That doesn't mean they like what they're doing. If you're mopping a floor, you don't like mopping a floor. But if you mop a floor with somebody else, it's a lot more fun, right? More positively impacts minorities and women. One of the things that you see when you bring a community into the scene is you have people who were on the outside, on the fringes, who when you involve them in community, not only does it positively impact them, like passing a course or understanding a problem, but it gets them involved long-term and has a more long-term positive impact. The retention rate, not only in this class was lower or higher, the retention was higher, but the dropout rate for those students were actually lower over time. And I think that's true in careers. If you can get a community involved, you have people who want to stick around. They want to see what happens next. Strong social bonds. That means people who could talk to one another outside of class about things that were not related to the class. So speaking of which, let's talk about socialization and promotion. So this is my grass is greener on the other side, right? Hilarious, I know. Get it? Doesn't networking mean that I'm encouraging my people to leave? I hear this a lot. I'm going to build this community. I'm going to cross-train my people. I'm going to get them involved with other organizations, other companies, other, you know, whatever user groups. And then I'm just encouraging them to leave. I'm encouraging them to pick up their trade, whatever I've taught them, and move on to a new job. So again, academia is the best. There's a whole book on this, and this is what the book has to say. It's a terrible quote. I can't wait to read it. A purposeful engagement to facilitate the flow of information and knowledge that helps support and enhance business intelligence to cope with the complexities and exposures of modern business. I feel like I should get a bingo for that, right? Handbook of Research on Business Social Networking. What does that mean? What does that even mean? That means nothing to me because it's so great. All right, what does socialization and promotion mean? I have a problem. Okay, but Jessica, you just talked about education and evaluation. We went over this already. No. This is different, right? If you are just talking about education and evaluation, the I have a problem is about a piece of software, right? It is about a bug in the system. It is about whatever Manisha wanted in that particular query. I have a problem under socialization and promotion is I have a job that I hate. I have a boss I can't stand. I have no idea how I'm going to make my childcare work with my job. Those are problems that are much bigger than just solving a problem on the network, right? And with socialization and promotion, you can then talk to other people. Well, have you tried this approach? I used to have that boss. You know, I found he's really receptive if you just write everything into an email before you go talk to him. Oh, okay, I'm going to try that. Or did you know there's HR benefits that help you with childcare? Let me tell you my experience. Or, oh my gosh, your coworker sucks, and that's the end of the story, right? That kind of socialization and promotion really helps people stay long-term. Excuse me. I have an open position. Now, that sounds like what I was just saying, like people are going to look for different jobs. Oh, no, no, no. Let me correct you. This is my favorite thing in the whole world to do because I'm like a super networker, right? If it was about networking, let's be clear, I would have a job that paid me $1 billion because I can work a room. That's not what networking is about. I have an open position is I go on the job board at UCSD every week. I'm not looking for a job. I really like my job. I'm looking for jobs for awesome people so that they can work with me. And that's what networking and building a community is about, is finding the right fit for your organization is about reaching out in the community and seeing who's out there. So either I have an open position or, hey, you have an open position and I have a friend that would be a great fit. And finally, I need a product. I don't know how many times this happens at UCSD all the time. I'm trying to solve this issue. I was thinking maybe we should install Slack, but I've never used it before. Oh my God, we have Slack? So do we. What do you guys use Slack for? Well, let's talk about channels, right? I have a product is I'm looking for a solution to a problem. There's lots of people out there that use tons of different products. I get to have all their experience just by building a community with them. It's pretty awesome. Okay. This is also one of my favorite things about socialization and promotion. I drink a lot. I drink lots of water. All right, so we have free resources, right? Either brains or free resources in that people have connections or they know what you've been through. We also have a positive feedback loop. If people are having a positive interaction with the community, they add to the community. That's just the way it works. They see value because they get value and they want to contribute value. And then they're working when they're not working. UCSD, my job is to be with all my wonderful sysadmins. On Thursdays, I take a bunch of sysadmins and we go to a pub that's on campus. We're not a party school. That's why we have a pub on campus, right? Nobody drinks at UCSD. It's very weird. And we go and we sit and I swear more problems are solved sitting down and hashing out problems over beer than they ever are over email. Being able to work when you're not working is a huge benefit of having a community. And then subcommunities benefit greatly. Subcommunities, again, I'm talking about women and minorities, people on the fringes. When they have socialization and promotion as part of their lives, they benefit and tend to stay in their communities, and I'm all about keeping diversity in tech, so that's a big thing for me. Connection lost, you lying liar. All right, fine. I'll tap on the keyboard like a heathen. All right, inspiration. Oh, great. Here comes the touchy-feely crap. I know that's what you're thinking. You think I'm going to talk about rainbows? Maybe we can build a dream board together. Oh my gosh, wouldn't that be great? Maybe I have a poster to show you. Yeah, no, okay. So don't dismiss inspiration. Inspiration is people doing things that they didn't even think of doing. It's creative problem solving. It's thinking about a problem in a much different way. It's being able to pull from a bunch of different resources to solve a problem. It's also feeling like an expert in your field. My story with this talk is because of the Sisters Board mailing list. If you don't know Sisters, Sisters is a women-run mailing list for system administrators that are women, right? And they have a mailing list, and I get a bazillion emails from them a day. And one woman from a podunk university in the Midwest emailed, "Hey, I need to build a sysadmin community. I have no idea where to start. Does anybody have any ideas?" And I was like, "Oh, I can answer this. I know the answer to this question. For once, I can answer it." So I wrote like four paragraphs and like detailing everything that I do, and I sent it off to her, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, this is so helpful. Like, I don't feel so lost. Thank you so much. This is great." And I was like, "Oh, this could be a talk." And so I wrote it up. Luckily, there was, at the same time, the Sisters was having a Google Hangout about how to write a proposal for a talk. So I listened to a great hangout on how to write a proposal, again from my community. And then I submitted a talk to Usenix Lisa, and it was accepted. Oh my God, so cool, right? So I felt like I was an expert in my field, and that empowered me to do something that was not even something I was thinking about doing. And it encourages more advanced endeavors. Anytime you go to a conference and you're like, wow, I didn't even know that was possible with system administration. I didn't even know that that could be done. Wow, did you know so-and-so is doing this crazy pants thing? We should talk to him more about it. That's when you're, that kind of inspiration makes you a better technologist, makes you a better human being, in my opinion. Right? It's great. All right. So I've convinced you. You were already convinced. It was a super easy job. Thanks. Where do you begin? All right. The first thing that you want to do is you want to identify a need. Who is your community and how specific do you want it to be? Do you want it to be only people who live in Boston, who attend this university and are interested in this type of technology, right? And then what is being asked for in that community? Is it, I want to learn more, I want more conferences, I want to meet other people who are like this. So I love Venn diagrams, secret passion of mine. I draw Venn diagrams for everything. What am I gonna have for breakfast? Things in my refrigerator, things that are for breakfast, things that aren't rotten, just because breakfast. All right. So an example, in case you don't know how Venn diagrams work, I know you do, but I just love Venn diagrams. We're going to go through these. Rails Bridge is a fabulous organization out of San Francisco that teaches women how to program in Ruby on Rails. I'm a big fan of Ruby on Rails and developers and women. And we didn't have anything like this in San Diego. So I wanted to do something in San Diego with women of all tech backgrounds who wanted to learn to program. We did a San Diego Ruby on Rails. I'm a writer. We wanted to do something that was like The Moth, if you've ever heard The Moth. If not, super do download it on your podcast immediately. It'll make you cry in the car. It's super great. So nonfiction writers who want to go on stage and storytell, that's a pretty small subset, that live in San Diego, created, I didn't create, but am part of the So Say We All organization that's in San Diego. Sometimes it doesn't work, right? I want to warn you, especially if you're good at drawing Venn diagrams and you want three things. I did undergrads that are fiction writers at UC San Diego. I called it Writer's Lab. It succeeded for about 6 months until those undergrads, bastards, graduated. And then they moved away. And then they were gone. And there was me who, you know, I was an undergrad at the time, but I was like a 10-year undergrad, right? I was going to be around for a while. They weren't. So it failed. So just be aware. So this is what, this is my love affair, right? I am in love with my sysadmins at UC San Diego. This is my little cross section. And when we created Campus Lisa, this is the subsection we used, right? These were the people that we were trying to hit. Obviously, if we named it Large Installation System Administration, Campus Style, Conference, these are the people who we were looking for. But then I came on board, and I told you, I love developers. I'm married to one, so I kind of like them. Right? I wanted to add developers into this mix. And then, like, people were like, remember, this is campus life, so academia is like 10 years behind you guys. People were like, there's this new thing called DevOps. And I was like, DevOps? What's that? And they're like, it's like being a developer and being a sysadmin. I was like, oh, DevOps, let's add that to our conference. Well, they weren't quite ready for the word DevOps, but they were definitely ready to have developers come to their conference. So we covered this huge area, and we made a new conference we still call Campus Lisa. I so want to rename it, right? I want to just call it Geeks. I think that'd be a great conference name, Geeks. And we had two, when I arrived on campus, my first Campus Lisa was 200 people. My last Campus Lisa in July was more than 400 people. So we doubled the amount of people we were reaching. We had people who were jumping tracks, right? Like, because there are developers that do sysadmin work and sysadmin work that do developers, or there's just people who are curious. They just want to network with people that are a little bit outside of their job and find out what's going on in their world. So that's what we did. There's me. People who love Venn diagrams talking to you right now. Maybe a little too much. That's me. It's a very small community of me. I love my community. All right, so step two, we've identified who we want to bring into our community. Recruitment. All right, who are we seeking? We're seeking people who have enthusiasm, who see a need, and the complainers. These are going to be three different people, generally, except for me. I am all three. So the first person you want to seek is the enthusiastic person. You want me. I can't come to your job, and I can't come to your campus. There are not more of me. But you want to find a me. You want somebody who's extroverted, who's super like, yeah, let's totally do that. That'll be great. I think this is wonderful. You are the best, right? You want that person. Make that person your BFF, because they're going to be great helping you build this community, because, like me, they talk too much. Those who see a need. These are your quiet people who totally want to support you in what you do. These are not people who are willing to, like, just go out and talk to everybody. They're very uncomfortable with that, but they really want to see you succeed. Those people are great. They're a great support system. They're going to be great for giving jobs to, and they're also going to be great keeping your community cohesive. And then finally, the complainers. We love to exclude the complainers. Oh, my gosh. But the complainers are great, because the complainers are really enthusiastic people who are just grumpy, right? Like, they have a need, they're interested, they really want to be involved, but the way that they do that is they just complain. So those are the people you want to look for. Now, there's going to be some fears. The first fear is, this will take up all my time. No one will care. I don't want to be in charge. Okay, first, you have to legitimize these fears. These are legitimate. This will take up all my time. Okay, not all your time, but it will take up some of your time. You got to commit some of your time if you want to get anything out of your community. But it's not going to take up all your time. And part of that is because we're going to have all these other people that are going to help us, and they're going to take part of these jobs too. It's not going to just be all on you. The second one is, no one will care. 90% of the time, when people say no one will care, they mean my boss won't care. My upper management won't care. Okay, is that true? Well, take the first part of my talk, go tell them why it's such a great idea to care. And if they still don't care, it's still no one, not no one. I care, you care. Can we do this without our upper management and our bosses? Maybe. Can we convince them to do this as a career development thing? Like, do you have written into your job description you can have 2 hours of career development a week or whatever? Then maybe you can convince them that way. And then the final thing is, I don't want to be in charge. Okay, so please don't leave. You're in charge. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. You are in charge. You're in this talk. You want a community. Somebody's got to be in charge. You can't wait for somebody to be the leader. You're going to be in charge. But I promise, it won't always have to be that way. And I think that's why people don't start community development, is they're so afraid that this is going to be their life for forever. It's not. You can start your community, and if you do it right, and you start, and we'll talk a little bit later on about benefits and delegating, if you do that right, you don't have to be in charge all the time, right? I'm sure Lisa 1 was started by somebody who thought they were going to be in charge by Lisa 15. They're not in charge, I promise you. All right, step 3, organization. Yay, we can bring back the tools, right? You can bring in your Slack, you can bring in your Facebook, you can bring in Google, whatever, Google Groups, mailing lists. You need to measure your tools versus your temperament of your group. And this may take some trial and error. My Campus Lisa committee, God love them, they love Slack. They wanted to have all of our meetings in Slack, which was great until I gave them jobs, and then they didn't do it because if it happened in Slack, it didn't really happen. And I'm kind of fearsome. I understand that I'm a bit intimidating, which works great face-to-face, but sucks on Slack. So we could not have meetings in Slack. We could do our day-to-day operations in Slack, but meetings once a week where I assign jobs had to be face-to-face. So you have to measure your tools versus your temperament. Your community may do great on Facebook. They may kind of fade away on Facebook. You'll have to check in with them, see what's going on, and see if the tool is not helping your temperament of your group. And then you have your talents. You're gonna measure the talents of your people. Do you have somebody like me who's gonna be great at going out there and recruiting? Do you have somebody who's gonna be great at graphic design or volunteers or whatever you want to do with your group? Find out what the talents of your people, what do those people wanna do? So I love quotes, but I love quoting me the best, right? I think everybody should quote themselves in their own talk, because that's hilarious, guys. All right, so if I had to, this is my quote. If you had to quote me, if you were like, Jessica Hill, I met her at this conference, and she said, delegating responsibility moves your community from being participants into being advocates. I'd be super flattered by that, right? So let me tell you a story. So Say We All, organization that does onstage storytelling for nonfiction writers, right? We go in a bar, there's like 100 people, people are crying, people are laughing, it's wonderful. We had one producer, right? He ran the show, he was the host of the show, his name was Nathan, he was great. He was the producer of the show for years, and one day he decided to move on, right? That was the best thing that happened to our organization, because here's what happened. We then started having alternate hosts, and all these people had been waiting in the wings, dying for a chance to volunteer and do something besides take tickets at the door or put out chairs. They wanted a real substantial role, and because it rotated every month, we got this huge conglomerate of producers. I became a production chair. I would have never done that had I not been a producer for a show, right? So I'm the production chair for So Say We All now because of that. When you divvy up responsibilities, when you start giving people substantial things to take on, a lot of times people think that everybody's going to crap out and they're just going to wander away. That's not going to happen. They're going to be so excited that you gave them some sort of responsibility that they continue to contribute to the group. So people want a role, they want to feel involved, and they want to be part of something bigger. Okay, yay, we have a community. Now what? All right, so you have a success, or you have a community, right? There's going to be some pitfalls. And this is really great. This is if you have an active community now, and you're like, wow, my community is really, really boring and stagnant, and I don't know what to do about it, this is for you. So Clay Shirky, who spoke at ETEC in 2003, like a billion years ago, he said, a group is its own worst enemy. And I totally agree. A group loves to build something up and then smash it to itty-bitty pieces because we can. It's awful. So how do we prevent that? Establish rules. This is a dinner party. This is not a right to be in my community. You don't have a right to be in my community. You are the host of a community, and the rules are you got to be a decent human being to be part of the community. The end. There is no, unless you're having a bad day or whatever. You act like guests at a dinner party. And as a good host, that's what you got to do. Kathy Sierra, who is like my personal hero, she co-wrote a blog called Creating Passionate Users a million years ago, and I still go back and read it all the time. She did this great graph, and if I was over there, I'd jump, but since I have to stay over here, I won't. Here's what happens. Somebody gets it. This is a user community, but I come from a user group background, so I think everybody's a user community. Users come in, they're beginners, they ask a bunch of questions, and then they die because they're intermediate users. They don't speak up. They may be lurking, but they don't speak up. And then we have experts that come in, and they answer all the questions from the beginners. That's great. Except for it doesn't give a chance for the intermediate users to become experts. So what can we do to help empower those intermediate users, our intermediate people in our community? Well, first of all, you have to say there are no dumb answers. And I know there are dumb answers. I'm being hyperbolic. But in general, you can't just smack somebody down because they did not give the answer you would have given. That's not fair. And it does not create a community. If something is wrong, you can absolutely point out that it's wrong. I'm not saying you can't do that, but you gotta do it in a decent human being way. Zero tolerance for people who don't act like that, right? If you are being nasty, there's zero tolerance. I email people all the time. My adorable sysadmins who act out of line get an email or a call from me that says, hey, you have a bad day because you're being a dick. And that kind of calling out will stop that behavior. There are also two other things that you can do. You can encourage advanced members to kind of help other members bring their skills up. I do this by, like, I have a SIS wiki, so I have a wiki of stuff on UCSD's campus that has to do with sysadmins. If there is somebody who's an expert on something, I will pair them with somebody who's an intermediate person and have them write an article together. And that way the intermediate person gets some knowledge and some background, and then the expert person feels like they're bringing up other people. The other thing that I do is just ask people to hang back. Don't answer those questions right away. Give somebody else a chance, especially if you have one person, Eric, who always answers immediately, right? Give other people a chance. The other problem that you have is that you become like me. I have cliques. I have people that I love and adore who don't flake on me, who are always great, and I keep them around, but that can be a problem because the same people equal the same solution. You have to step back. You have to take your fringe members in, find out who's on the edges. Why are they on the edges? Have you ever been in the hallway here and there are four guys standing together shoulder to shoulder? You don't want to interrupt that. Is that what your community is? If it is, then you need to take a step back and invite other people in. Shifting responsibilities is part of that, and let me tell you a little bit about that. So to get people to stay, shifting responsibilities is a huge part. That's what I was talking about, like shifting people around. The things that you should shift responsibilities should also be things that show up on a job description. I have a woman who was part of my committee who wanted to try her hand at graphic design. Okay, go for it. Another person hated being a volunteer coordinator. She hated people. So I assigned her to vendors. They're not people. So just shift those responsibilities. And that's something that they can put on a resume if they were the person who was involved in working with vendors or working with volunteers. And an active community feeds itself. That kind of stamina keeps building. So that's what you do when you're one of your benefits is to keep it active. That helps build that stamina. So you need to re-examine your past solutions. So if you, for instance, the Campus Lisa group, we identified it long ago. It's shifted, it's changed. We had to re-examine who was in our group. That will help you figure out what's being beneficial to the community. Is there new blood? Do you have a bunch of young writers that are sitting along the edges feeling like they can't contribute? Invite them in. Are the tools still working? Evaluate, is Facebook dead? Maybe. I can't get on Instagram that much. It's too hard. And then are the rules in place? Are people stepping out of your community because you're letting some jerk tear everybody else down? That's not acceptable. You gotta kick that guy out or tell him to behave, or girl, whatever. Kick him out. And then is that gonna help bolster your community? And then finally, is it still a benefit to your community? Do you have an old community that really isn't beneficial anymore, but y'all like to sit around and drink? Great. Maybe it doesn't need to be a community. Maybe it can just be drinking buddies. All right, so to me, a community is a living organism, and sometimes they die. So that's the other thing you want to consider. Is it dead? Is it dead, Jim? It's dead. If it's dead, just let it die. Or reinvent it, bring it back to life with, I don't know, a makeover. Okay, so that's me, Jessica Hill. The end. Nothing too hard. This is like the worst part for anybody who's a speaker. You're like, oh, please don't ask me the square root of something. I don't know how to do that.
So,
two, right? Okay, good. Hi, Connie Lynn. What's up?
Hi, Jessica. Jessica and I met this weekend, this week, whatever. Anyway, what do you do about the broken stair problem?
The broken what?
What do you do if you have a person who in your community who everybody acknowledges is a jerk off?
Yeah.
And but nobody is really willing to speak out to them because uncomfortable and so geek social fallacies and all of that.
Yeah. It's really hard, right? Because everybody has that person in the group. You really just you come from a place of empathy, I think, is the very first thing I can advise. A lot of times people who are acting out for a reason. They feel like they're excluded. They feel like they're not being heard. They're not being invited along. They don't feel like they're the cool kid. So first come from a place of empathy. If that person is truly acting just to be a jerk, then you just need to find a Jessica Hill in your life who will smack that person down. Because it's not about saving your feelings. And I'm not saying that you should be exclusive or elitist, but what I'm saying is that it takes work to be part of a community, and if you're not willing to work, don't be part of my community. Be part of, you know, the snarking on Reddit community. Yes.
So then that sort of plays into my question, but what do you do with the people that really want to be helpful and in the end are effectively useless is the word that comes to mind. So they really want to be helpful. They try. They do a reasonably good job. You would like them to never help you again. Or at least not in that respect. Some other way. How do you redirect them in a way that says, hey, great, but not here?
Right. So, revealing thing about Jessica Hilt is that she loves to give people lots of chances. It makes me not the best manager. I'm a pretty good manager, but I'm not the best manager because I don't like to fire people, especially if they come from a place of good. A lot of times it's finding out where they are a better fit. You know, if it's something like this guy is a genius at coming up with new classes, but is terrible at teaching, well, then we just need to put him, does he feel important because he comes up with amazing class ideas? We need to make him feel like he is important that way so that he doesn't have to teach to feel important. Or is it something he can be retrained on? Like, you know, we had a guy who was leading writing workshops who was really intimidating, I think physically, but also he was very gruff. And we just spoke to him and said, like, okay, you're super intimidating. I don't think you know that, but this is why you're intimidating. Here's some things that we think you could do to help bring in other people that are probably being turned off because you're so intimidating. In the end, if none of that works, I don't know. Find them a job doing something really dumb that they love. Make them volunteer coordinator. No, I just kidding, just kidding. You know, put them in charge of something really fun that gets a lot of attention, like swag. Swag is a big, man, do I love to assign people to do swag? Because nobody likes shopping more than people. I don't know. Those little catalogs, everybody gets so excited. It's so dumb. That's the best advice I can give. Or if anybody else has advice, we have a whole community here, right? Anything else? All right, if you'd like to tweet me, I'm at BZZTBAA, that's BZBA, if anybody wants to pronounce that. Means electric sheep. Philip K. Dick fan. And then, oh, yes. Yes, was somebody?
Please do not change it to geek.
Remember I said there are people that are complainers? This is my friend Chris Harris, who's a big complainer. Yeah. And you can also email me at jessica@ucsd. That's not a typo. jessica@ucsd.edu. Because being queen of the geeks means that I get jessica@ucsd.edu. Right? It's great. It's a good benefit. All right. Thank you so much.